So lately, at our Sunday gaming group, we've been doing a lot of board gaming stuff.
You know, you gotta be careful with that. That's generally looked upon as sort of the death knell of a gaming group, is when they're playing more board games than role-playing
games. Well, I understand that. We've had people write in talking about how their group quit role-playing because board gaming became easier, quicker. You know, you can jack around a lot more if you're playing a board game.
Yeah, with our group, it's just the substitute till we get a new campaign.
I see, definitely it's a substitute. We enjoy
board games. They're in-betweeners. Yeah.
But you can tell every time we get together, there's still that real hunger there for a role-playing.
Oh my God, we're putting role-playing, especially like when we play Arkham Horror.
We're playing, it's not only is that hunger of the first topic of conversation is, okay, when will the next RPG be ready to go?
Yeah.
We're just playing this as filler. But then
we have catchphrases in HeroQuest.
We sit down to play the board game.
And my hair.
Role-playing to them. Horror, we have whole storylines going.
Like, event happens, and, you know, somebody else draws a card, totally unrelated event happens. Somebody else draws a card, totally unrelated, weird thing happens.
There's a narrative
there. Monster, you know, and then Dan and I are sitting there, we're going, we're connecting the dots. We're filling in the stories between the unrelated events and the motivations of the characters.
One we've been playing lately is HeroQuest.
Yes.
You guys dug out the old Milton Bradley HeroQuest.
And what, when I say you guys, you and Pat had never played HeroQuest before.
Yeah,
right?
I've never played it before.
You had never played it before.
I always wanted to play it. I'd heard of it before.
Nobody I
knew. I'd never even heard of it.
I'd heard of it, oddly but enough. Nobody I knew had it.
I played it with my cousins.
Because you've got to remember that growing up, you know, my parents did not approve of the whole role-playing thing.
Right.
And the only game I was able to get in under the radar was Star Trek, because Star Trek seemed harmless.
Right.
There was no magic and demons and stuff in this. Remember, this is back in the, I guess, real early 90s. Oh, no, it's been late 80s. So it's been like mid to late 80s.
Yeah,
so you're talking the height of the whole Pulling Report and the Black Leaf.
It was like early 80s, but like a lot of that sort of stuff, it gets into the consciousnesses of some groups and some people. And when the evidence is presented and the truth behind that stuff is presented, that aspect doesn't make it out. It doesn't make it out into certain communities and certain people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I had a completely different issue. We were 2 miles outside of city limits, and my older siblings were both at least 10 years older than me. I had nobody my age to play board games with. I loved them growing up, and I always wanted, you know, I'd always look them in the toy aisles. I always wanted to play, and I was so separated from...
You were effectively an only child.
Yeah, I was so separated from anyone else my own age that board games just... I didn't have that chance.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had pretty much the same situation as you. I actually lived outside of the city and far enough out that I was essentially alone. And I am an only child, so I didn't have anybody to play board games with either.
Growing up...
So it would be occasionally whenever we get together with some like family reunion.
Once I had a niece and now a nephew, constantly, every chance I get, I'll play board games with them because I never had that growing up. Yep. I always wanted it.
Well, growing up, I played a pretty large number of board games. But let me clarify that by board game, I'm not talking
Settlers of Catan.
No, I would say I'm talking. We played a lot of things like Life and Monopoly and Sorry.
I like that's what Life.
I'm not bashing it. I'm not bashing the game.
You give me 3D objects on a board game like HeroQuest or Life, I'm into it for some reason. Well,
and you're not going to sit a 6-year-old in front of Arkham Asylum.
No.
Well, I don't know.
I might. But I'm just waiting.
I don't know how Life is now, but at least the version we had way back when had this spinner that you would use.
That was awesome.
And of course, if you got a good crank on it, the thing would just launch like a flying saucer before hitting back down again. And
it's
been
a long time since I played Life. I wonder if there's any real tactical decision in Life. I mean, there's the early one, go to college or go to work. And then after that, isn't it all just random, random?
I've never played it. I wouldn't know.
You can get insurance, and then insurance will protect you from catastrophes, but cost money.
I never played Life. Monopoly, but I've never played a game that made it to completion. Used to love Stratego. Clue is still one of my favorite games.
Stratego, I really enjoy Stratego, but I don't play the normal Napoleonic Stratego. I play a game called Stratego Legends.
I have Lord of the Rings Stratego.
Yeah. I haven't played Lord of the Rings, but Stratego Legends is fun. It's fantasy, and each of the units you have, every single one does something different. They have little blurbs written up on them. And, you know, they move different. Like, instead of a flag, you have castles. Mm-hmm. One of the castles is a floating castle It's a castle on a big, huge floating rock, and you can actually move your castle around so they can't find it.
Sarah and I still occasionally will battleships or checkers, chess, things like that.
What was the board game? It was a war game, and it was red and blue, and they were sort of like chess pieces that stood up, and on the front of them it had the face of the soldiers, and on the back of them, some had a bomb.
That's Stratego.
Okay. Yeah. What's the other one?
Risk?
Risk. I was thinking Risk when you were saying Stratego.
No, that is Stratego.
Okay, yeah, Stratego. Because I remember that. Risk is another.
Here's my problem with those types of board games, though. And this is going to sound completely arrogant, but I'm just being honest.
Like the basic early
ones, basic, your standard.
Candyland, Sheets and Land.
Yeah, that type of stuff. They don't hold my interest.
Right.
They are just too damn simple.
You're not the market for them, though. Those are the games that basically they're marketing to families and kids. It's something you can play with kids, something you can play with other family members.
I guess. I mean, some of those, I think, like Monopoly and such.
Monopoly has a bit of crunch to it.
Yeah.
I mean,
Candyland or Chutes and Ladders, yeah, certainly. You're right. It's largely true. I don't know if that's the entire story, but that is largely true. But it drives me nuts because I'll go over to my parents' house for a holiday or something, and one of my sisters always wants to bust out the board games. And it's, once again, these are not European-style board games. This is not complicated games. And it just does not freaking hold my attention. It's like playing 6 hours of Reader Rabbit. I want more options. I want things to do.
And you know, if you brought one of your games over there, they'd probably take one look at it and say, this is too complicated. There's too many rules. This isn't fun anymore.
In the, quote, studio here, there's a box of Ticket to Ride on the shelf that I know that you bought, Dan, so that you can try and introduce your family into a more advanced game. And how did that go over?
Well, it's actually never gone anywhere largely by my fault. I have dropped the ball. I keep forgetting to take those games over. I need to just get off my ass and do it. I also have a copy.
You need like what I have, man. You need bags of fun.
Well, I have Carcassonne as well.
Bags full of these board
which
games.
Which is not going to be as intimidating as something like, I know if I took over like Arkham Horror, I'd just shut them down.
Oh, sure.
You know what I think the best bridging game is? Settlers of Catan.
I think Carcassonne's pretty good as well. I mean, I think there's some of them that have...
Carcassonne, I think, has too much math for a lot of people.
I even tried...
The farming is confusing, but other than that...
I don't think it's a good bridge game.
Man. I even tried kind of breaking the ice with some that are unusual, but aren't super complicated. One of my little sisters decorated a lot of her house with rubber ducks. Mm-hmm. And so I got her a game called Duck Duck Go, or something to that effect. It has some name that probably was translated from German and didn't quite work out. But it is a game where you play rubber ducks, and the rubber ducks that come with the game are collectible. They're random, like which ones are in there. And you play ducks racing around the bathtub. It's a silly game, but it's not a traditional roll the dice and move your mice sort of game. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's really been my fault because I have failed to bring these games over. But I did at one point when Tex was in town, he came over here with Emily and also brought one of my sisters, and they played Descent. She seemed to enjoy it. I can't say for sure because...
Too surprising because I really didn't enjoy it.
Well, I think, and I know why, we were botching the rules.
We were botching the rules
big time.
And I had played HeroQuest before, and I had a certain nostalgia and a certain love of HeroQuest. And to me, Descent is really trying very hard to be HeroQuest Plus. And I don't quite think it's pulling it off.
I like Descent a lot.
Sure.
I love its flexibility. I would love for our group to give it another try.
Like I would totally give it a try.
Our first experience went wrong because we misread one or two of the rules. We didn't have most of the rules wrong. I mean, we were right on 99% of them.
That's a consistent theme. I can think of three games now then that we've had that issue on.
Well, with those
Last Night on Earth. The Napoleonic one we played a while back, and now this one, too.
But yeah, those one or two rules radically changed the way the game plays. Like, for example, one of the ones we screwed up, because for us, the game was too hard. We were just getting our asses kicked up and down the block the whole game long. Well, part of the reason was, when you open a treasure chest, whatever treasure it drops, it's supposed to drop for each person in the party. We were only giving it to the person that opened the treasure chest. So, for example, we never had sufficient equipment to take on anything. Because instead of passing out four treasure cards, we would pass out one.
That's almost like not knowing what your character does, isn't it, Pat?
Pretty much,
Last Night on Earth, we were playing with Pat, and something about, like, you need to attack the zombie and win, basically.
Yeah.
And your chance of doing this was very, very low or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And you couldn't do it, and you're like, damn it, this is so unfair, and I'm so pissed off, and this game's just stupid.
If I could only save on a four.
If I could only save on a four, I could do it. Well, his character had an inherent power that allowed him. Basically, it was an I win button for the exact situation he was in.
We spent the whole game looking for an item that we had a card that would let us go through the deck and pull the item out on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just stuff like that. You know, and I think you're sort of touching on something, too. All these games that we're talking about are a lot of fun, but I'm almost wondering, a lot of them have very complex rule sets for a board game. Now, you know, I'm not, you know, so get these things. I mean, good Lord, we will sit down with games and Dave will sit down and pull out the rule book, you know, this 16 page leaflet and sit there and sort of read it for 30 minutes and try to figure out how to play the game before we could even start in the game. So, you know, that's another thing that you've got. I mean, these other games that are like for family games are like the freaking instructions are printed on the inside of the cardboard box.
Yeah. But that's an index card.
It is. It's a simple game for family. So, yeah. So it is more complex.
That's why these games hold my attention.
And you're absolutely right. They are more fun. But you know, and you've got to play it a few times and then you know how to do it. And then you can pull it out and.
I'm so proud.
I have
Arkham Horror with every single expansion that they have released currently, and I have it all in one box and two cardboard card boxes that people put baseball cards and magic cards in. Two sleeves of them.
That's an impressive feat considering all the stuff that comes with those games.
Mm-hmm. Arkham Horror, that aspect of it kind of pisses me off. You'd think that they sell so many of those expansions and stuff, and there's so much stuff to those games. Why doesn't that company sell a boxing solution? I mean,
why don't any of them?
Charge me $30, $40. I'll buy the box is specifically made for that.
Just put better dividers in the box. Yeah. That has been one of my big piss-offs with a lot of these games, is trying to put them back into the box is about as easy as repacking after a long vacation or refolding a AAA map. I mean, it's you don't know where to put things. You can't organize them real well. Trying to dig them all out, and they're all jumbled up. Not because you put them away jumbled up, but just because the box really isn't meant to accommodate them. It's like these games are not meant to be replayed. They're meant to be played. And I don't mean that because of the rules or because of the fun. I mean, because you physically can't replay the damn thing.
You know, the cheap-ass games philosophy, they're a pseudo board game maker, but their philosophy is that all that stuff, the chits, the dice, the counters, all that sort of crap is stuff that you already have, you already own. So if you own two or three board games, all three of those board games have dice, mm-hmm. yet they make you buy the dice each time.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And they're like, well, why don't we just print the rules and the minimal stuff that a person needs to play this game and just sell that and sell it at a greatly reduced cost?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty interesting. Although I have noticed that they are selling game like Kill Dr. Lucky is now a board game with all the chits that you can buy. And so, well, you know, whatever.
You know, I kind of fall at the other end of the spectrum from some of you guys. As much as I love these kind of games, I can have just as much fun with some of the simpler ones. Clue to this day is still one of my favorite games of all time.
Clue is such a drag. I even hated that.
Clue is a logic puzzle. I do logic puzzles for fun. I go out online, find the most complicated ones I can get, download, and I do those.
Clue is just an if-then, or it's a
logic puzzle.
Reasoning.
All it is a logic puzzle.
Oh, you know.
You define this. It can't be this because I saw this here. Check that off.
There was a game that we had grown up. I could not tell you for life what the name of it was, but it was a crime-solving game like Clue, but a whole lot more fun, where everyone played.
Did you hear the implication in that?
Yeah. Everyone played a detective, and there was a criminal somewhere on the board, and you were in a city. It was like an overhead thing of like city streets and then different stores, and it would start off. Like, you had this device, electronic device that looked kind of like a phone, and you would start the game, and it would tell you, like, there's been a break-in at the jewelry store. So you know that's where the criminal is, and of course, you guys start across the map, and he's moving, and every round he moves, and this electronic device was keeping track of where he was. So everyone playing the game was blind to this guy's location, but you might hear things like, you hear footsteps, and then you hear shattering glass. So that might imply he broke a window. So you might be like, there's a window over here. I think that's the way he went. And you try to chase this guy down. As you got closer, you would dial in on the phone locations you thought he was at, and you'd either get the arrest or it would give you what they called a raspberry, basically just make a noise at you, meaning, no, it's not where he is. And as you went around, you could keep dialing in things, looking for clues. And I can't remember exactly how it worked.
Why does it sound like Carmen Sandiego to me? This like would, a board game version.
This would have predated Carmen Sandiego. I mean, this was a, I think, I don't know my dates of Carmen Sandiego, but I believe this would have predated that. It's, I mean, this was an old board game. I can't think of what the name of it was. Oh, well, not the really massive. You know, something else that I really like in these more sophisticated board games that I cannot off the top of my head recall having ever seen in your standard board game like you get from a toy store.
Production quality?
No, some of them I've seen even have really good production quality.
I've seen both ends of that spectrum both sides of the games. I don't give you production quality at all.
I'll say my solid wood folding copy of Risk. I mean, it's pretty high production qualities.
Nah, you just use that for Energon.
I do. Absolutely. For anyone that wasn't a Fear the Con 2, I went out and bought a copy of Risk simply so I could have the little wooden cubes that come with the older version of the game, and I was using those as Energon cubes. But cooperative play.
That's a big one for
me. The idea that you are playing together against the game, because look, I've said many times on the show, I've said many times off the show, I would much rather see what I can build with somebody than what I can do to somebody. And
well, my thing is it's never fun to be that guy who gets knocked out of the game first and the game's going to go on for another 2 hours.
Of course, you can have that in cooperative play, too. I mean, in Hero Quest, you were the wizard and you were knocked out at the beginning of the map this last time.
Okay, I took responsibility.
He committed suicide. Yes.
It was entirely
his
fault.
I was trying to stunt something, and I was trying to really, really show off.
Yeah.
I bit it, and it was my fault.
Chad was, so you were either showboating or committing suicide. Because you had one hit point. I walk up, I'm like, I've got like 3 healing potions. I'll give you one. And you're like, no.
So. I had it planned. I opened the door and it's like, I know I can take one really powerful guy. And I open the door and there are 3 really weak guys. And I can only take one of them.
One trick pony was asked to perform thrice.
Yes.
And it did not happen.
Yes.
You know, I like the cooperative play, but it's kind of cool when you do have a little, I don't really know what to call it, a little bit of competition going on in the aspect of, like Hero Quest, you've got one person that's running the GM, controlling the bad guys, but Battlestar Galactica, you have a Cylon sympathizer or a Cylon in the group that is actively sabotaging you and you have no idea who it is. And that's part of the game. That for me was really cool. I enjoyed that aspect. Everyone was still working together except the one person.
There's another one. It's a horror horror board game. Is it called Murder at the House on Haunted Hill or...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
God, I don't remember what it's called. You have tiles, and you build a mansion. Everybody's on the same team.
And you have one betrayer.
Well, and eventually you make these roles as you're searching for clues and items and stuff. And then eventually, you have one betrayer, and you go to the scenario in the book and kind of figure out who that is. And, you play it out. Maybe he's a werewolf. Maybe it's somebody who's... There's all sorts of different scenarios. But it still works because the game is over when either they win... Or everybody gets them. You know, there's an end point for the game that both parties achieve.
Why is this bonus episode here giving me Christmas ideas?
For presents?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to my nephew and, like, some of the games. He got a board game last year. It wasn't even a board game, but it was, he's pretty young. He's under 5, so he's getting some of these really simple games. This one is a little, basically a little ball that's going up top and... You've got things that can, a fish that can knock it down, and I was playing it with him, and it's like, there's really not much point to this. I mean, it's simple as trying to teach him math, but...
Is it engaging him, though? Or was he like, there's no point to this, that's trying to teach me math, I'm not interested?
He just wanted it to do the spinning thing that drops the balls all over the place.
Ah. So, I got a question and a comment, unrelated. Question, how many of you guys had Mousetrap?
You know, I didn't have it as a kid. My wife absolutely loves the game. So as an adult, after we were married, as a matter of nostalgia, we were walking through a yard sale and she found a copy of it completely. You know, it's kind of a little beat up box, but all the pieces were there. So we grabbed it. We put it together. And
does it work?
Yeah.
That was always the thing with Mousetrap.
Never get it to work.
Excuse the pun. It was always the roll of the dice on whether the particular box you had was machined precisely enough to work, or if the plastic was just warped enough that something in this equation was always going to go wrong and the trap was never going to fall.
We did have to go out and buy some new rubber bands to replace it. But yeah, that was entirely a nostalgia purchase. And you know what? She still loves the game because she loved it in her childhood. I don't know if she'd like it now if she didn't, but...
You know, my comment... So we were playing the TSR D&D competitor game to Hero Quest called Dragon Scry.
God, that was awful.
Well, no, but there was, it was. But there was one great thing in there, which was the elf character, the guy that they got to pose for that picture. It is uncanny how much he looks like Chris.
Yes.
I mean,
so much so that I took a picture of
I may have to get that
card.
Picture. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get that picture
Chad
from
and,
you for the show
and
notes.
Texted to,
I watched
Chris
the VHS and I kept thinking I'm looking on the screen and seeing Chris. I mean,
yeah, it is unfreaking canny. But yeah, you talking about rubber bands. Did anyone but me ever have crossbows and catapults?
Oh, hell yeah, I did. Yeah.
And that, I didn't have did it, but know, I knew someone that did and I got that, to play it once.
That game was awesome because it said that really there are no rules to this game. You will have to figure out and make up your own rules to this game.
Actually, last year for Christmas, I was looking at Toys R Us to see if they have any equivalent, any modern-day version of that game.
Oh, no, you put an eye out.
And I couldn't find anything.
Yep, that's far too dangerous.
But
it's too violent.
You mentioned rubber bands. Love it. Think of it because of the fact that you had used rubber bands when assembling the game, and we had to come up with house rules against what we called souping up, which is when you take a rubber band, instead of putting it on there, you put it on there, twist it into a figure eight, and then double it up.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, this the tension on a catapult goes from, you know, it'll launch to the, what they call the carom or however.
Carom?
It's C-A-R-E-M. Carom? I don't know. I'm probably in screw spelling. But it's like a coin. Okay, it's like a little plastic coin. And you would launch these across the field at each other. But if you took your ballista or your catapult and you started doubling up the rubber bands, damn, you could get some force on those things.
Jesus Christ, this is violent. All right, show of hands, who had yard darts?
Oh, I had yard darts.
Yeah, baby.
My grandparents. Awesome. Let's show hands on a podcast.
Yeah.
I see you raised your hand there, didn't you?
I did.
Uh-huh. I was actually the only one that didn't.
I had yard darts. Well, I did not. My grandparents that lived in Illinois, they had them. Mm-hmm. And we'd go, they had a yard that was very flat. Ours is on a hill. We have a pretty big yard for a suburban house. I mean, it's like somewhere close to an acre. I mean, it's a big lawn. My grandparents had a somewhat smaller yard, but they had a very long and flat yard. Mm-hmm. So it was perfect for playing yard darts. You just take these things and launch them straight up. And this was back in an age.
Did you die when you played it?
I did. I died every time I played it. Every single time I played it, I would throw these darts forward with appropriate adult supervision, and they would just lock on using image recognition, come straight back, and crush my skull every
time.
That's
awesome.
It was fantastic. I look forward to doing it. Look, if you've got a child who's over 8, this is probably not a good idea. But if they're 8 through infant, yard darts,
yes,
perfect toys. Yes. Put them out in the lawn. You know, they can't throw them, but they can at least watch them sail overhead. It's a great idea.
You could tell them to go catch,
and then
too.
Teach them to smoke.
Yes. While they play yard darts.
Hold this apple on your head.
The good old days. The 70s.
I love board games. And actually, I love all games. And I love role.
I know that about you,
yes.
Chad.
And I love role-playing games. And my love of role-playing games actually comes from my love of board games. And the reason why is because it's a sad story. I was an only child. Or I am an only child.
So am I.
Yeah. And
I was almost, I mean, I had two older siblings, but again, the closest one in age is 10 years older
and
than me.
Everybody who lived in my neighborhood around me was older than me by many, many years, like teenagers and stuff.
He at least had a neighborhood.
I know.
Hayseeds. I mean, you guys had your cow manure and electric fences to keep you occupied.
Actually, no.
I didn't have that.
I was on a hill, so we had
you
woods.
Didn't even have cow poo,
no.
Wayne.
We had
That's
woods.
Awful.
We had woods at a billboard.
Well, you at least you had a billboard. You should have gone
I train
over
tracks
to,
too. They were
yeah,
awesome.
You should
we
have
had
gone
train over tracks too. Actually,
yeah. I lived in a nice neighborhood. There were no train tracks. So,
did you at least have a septic tank you could play with?
We
had a lagoon. I didn't have a septic tank. I had a lagoon. But I could actually fire
old splashes.
I fired firearms on my property, so beat that. That was my fun, taking out the 22 and just blowing holes in shit.
22's yeah, not a gun.
Literally.
It is to a 10-year-old.
Literally blowing holes in shit. That's what I said. Yeah, that's what you said.
That's exactly what I meant.
I know.
When Smith & Wesson comes out with a board game, I will play it once. If I win, I will retire.
Yeah, it's a six shooter and one bullet. That's all it is, yeah, rattling around in there.
I think they have one like that. It's a version of roulette.
Yeah.
Yeah, my idea of a board game was I got bored, so I got my 20 gauge and went out and started shooting things.
So anyway, I had
the evolution for me was the reverse. I start excluding Candyland and things like that, but talking about these deeper, more sophisticated board games, I got my start in role-playing games and moved into the board games.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember when we very first did this show, you made a bunch of comments about how you don't like board games. We were talking like we had just picked up Arkham and we were playing some other stuff. And you were like, I have no interest in playing that. All board games suck. How did you actually like get into that? How did you break out?
You know, I'm thinking. Peer pressure. I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with it.
Well, maybe so. I'm thinking back. And in 3.5 years of doing this show, my views on things have evolved, and some of that's just...
No, 3 years ago, you were right then, and you are right now.
In 3.5 years, reality has changed.
Yes, there you go.
I've remained equally accurate.
His correctness has transcended.
Yes, but reality has changed, you know.
I know my reality's changed in a short time. I didn't even know some of these type of games even existed before a year ago.
I have to say, Wayne, when I first met you, you were a nerd with a really big hole in your life, and that hole was role-playing games.
Are you saying you filled my hole?
I filled your hole.
He filled that hole only he could find.
That's right.
You have to believe it's there.
Yeah, it was like concepts like a game like Arkham Horror where you're working together, things like that. I didn't even know those concepts existed. I mean, the most advanced games I had been playing had been like things like Stratego, chess. I mean,
And it is kind of funny.
Oh, that's not advanced, but I still play that one.
You know, we are talking about I think the big difference between like these family and more, you know, child centric games is and these more advanced games is the very fact that we're talking about cooperative play. I mean, you really don't find that at all. It's those other games
not
have
true of all of them.
Well,
Catan's
no, but
not cooperative Carcass.
No, so okay, right. But I'm saying, but in those other games like, you know, Stratego, Risk, there is a winner and at least one or more losers. Somebody wins.
Yeah.
That's sort of the point of all those games.
I can't really think of any game on that sort of tier where there is a cooperative style game.
It's
Chutes and Ladders, there's somebody wins.
Yeah.
Candyland, somebody wins. I love Chutes and Ladders when I was a little kid.
Game I used to play. I've not talked to too many other people who have ever heard of this game. It's a game called Mastermind. Is anyone
sounds
here?
Sounds familiar, but
all right, the way it would work is whoever's playing the Mastermind has, it's like 4 or 5 colored pegs. You can put them in whatever order you want. I don't remember how many colors they were. But you put them in, I don't remember, so I'm just going to make this up. But let's say I went like red, white, yellow, red, red, or something like that. I think it's actually 4 pegs. So it says we're red, white, yellow, red. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is then you would have to try and guess. You would have this row of pegs that went up the little play field.
I've also heard this called Safecracker too.
And so put in a combination, and for each one that you had completely correct, I would score you one way. For each one you had that was the right color but wrong slot, I would score you a different way. But I would not tell you which one's which.
Right.
And so based on that, you had to
trial and error and deduce and try and come up with
the right combination before you hit the end of the field and ran out of play space, at which point the Mastermind wins.
You know what's kind of cool about those games, Dan, is those have worked really well with newer video games when they're looking for a way to put a crazy puzzle in. Things like that are being implemented as part of video games, too, because it's a simple concept that they can add back in.
But Chad, getting back to your question...
Yeah,
I think it's like I said, in 3.5 years of doing this show, you know, you get feedback from other people, you get exposed to new ideas, and that has an impact on you. I mean, unless you're just so bottled up and so obstinate that you're just not listening to anyone, I mean, your views are going to evolve. And I think when I came into the show, I wasn't a big fan of board games for a couple of reasons. One was, if as best I recall, is a negative association, because to me, board games represented two things. There were the simple board games you could go and get at any toy store which were boring as hell, and I'm tired of playing at every family function. Then you get these more boutique games, these European-style games that I'm seeing at conventions. But at times, at least, and this was purely the anecdotes I was dealing with, the interactions I was having with the fans tended to be very snobbish and very exclusive. And once again, this is purely the encounters I was having, because I have since gone to many cons and played many board games with many people and not had this problem since.
The board game community is, on the whole, is huge. And to me, they're... I have noticed two kinds. People who are very inclusive and very open, and then people who, it's not that they're not inclusive and open, but they're very competitive. They play board games on a competitive level.
And I think that may have also been somewhat turned me off, was, on the one hand, I don't think I knew all the options out there. I don't think I understood exactly what all these games were like. But at the same time, I'm just not a big fan of competitive play. I mean, like every human being out there, you put me in a competitive situation, and I'll do my best tries to it. You know, I will fight harder and whatever. And I will probably say in my life, I've been put in some competitive situations where everyone had written me off and I came through and pulled out first place or whatever. But that's just not the way I like to roll. I mean, I don't like conflict. And now, granted, most of these games you're playing for fun and people are probably being cool. But the fact is, you're still trying to win. And trying to win means making somebody else lose. And I'm not... this is not some bleeding heart thing where I want everybody where I want everybody to be a winner. It's more, this is just not, I don't consider this fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand life has winners and winners and losers. I am not a believer in everyone who tries deserves a blue ribbon. Okay. I am not, that's not my method of thought, but I just, for fun, that's not what I want to do. If I'm going to work, yeah, I'm in competition with other companies. I'm in competition with other potential employees, maybe other actual employees. If I wade out onto some field where I'm being performance measured, yeah, I have to do all that. But when I kick back on the weekend to have fun, I don't want to relive that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in conflict.
I like both, but I have a strange situation where my wife is a sore loser and a bad winner, too. So the idea of cooperative board gaming is kind of good, because if we're playing any other kind of board game, it's a matter of, even if I want to let her win, either way,
You lose. Yeah. No matter what.
Whether I win or lose, I'm going to lose. So I like the cooperative gameplay for that aspect. But I do like competitive gameplay on board games, too. I like, whether I win or lose, I like working towards something, even if it means I'm working against
myself. I just maybe need to play that game they're talking about, a Family Guy, where whoever can take the most Tylenol PM wins.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm not a competitive person in any way. I mean, I really dislike competition. I mean, on one hand, it's like, well, I don't have anything to prove. And then if you use that argument to people who are competitive, they say, well, I don't have anything to prove either. I'm competitive to see how far I can push myself. I want to be challenged. I need a challenge.
Yeah, you know, Chad, I find you to be a very competitive person in certain areas. Not when it comes to board games or games or things like that, but when it comes to speech and debate and things like that, I think without even realizing it, your competitive nature comes out in that aspect.
I don't see it
in any other way. I don't see it in any other part of your life other than that.
Well, this may be,
it definitely comes out there.
This may be a semantic debate, but is strong-willed / bullheaded the same as competitive? Because that's what you're seeing, is not competitiveness, but you're seeing bullheadedness. And I don't know.
No, I would disagree. I think there is a competitive nature to Chad when it comes to talking about certain subjects.
I think every,
especially when he feels strongly about it.
Well, every human being's got some competitive streak.
I'm just saying that's the only place I see it coming out in him. I see it come out in different places and different people.
You know, Chad, to your point, this is a discussion I used to have with Tex all the time, because he used to love playing like real-time strategy games competitively. Mm-hmm. This was way back. I mean, we're talking like Command & Conquer 1.
Yeah.
And he would come back from college and he'd bring home some computers. And this is back in the day when you played by hooking a null modem cable between two computers. And
been there, done that.
Yeah. And we would play, and I would want to play against AI enemies. And he would raise the argument, to which I really don't have a good reply, because he's right, which is, he said, a human enemy will always challenge you in ways the AI can't. because of the fact that it can always do new and unexpected things. And it was interesting because the one game we played of Command & Conquer, he finally talked me into playing it competitively. He played GDI, I played Nod. And the game crashed actually before we could finish it. We set a timer. I don't remember what it is. So I'll just make up a number. So like for 15 minutes, there's no engagement. So we have 15 minutes to basically build our infrastructure and get things ready to go because the Zerg Rush thing is just crap. I mean, this was even before the phrase Zerg Rush existed, and it was just crap. So we said, look, we're going to take like 15 minutes, and when this egg timer dings, then the shots can fly. Until then, to Gentleman's Agreement, there will be no engagement. And we played the game.
Don't play like that with Johnny G, man.
No.
He'll see that as, that's 15 minutes for me to Zerg Rush you.
Well, I'll tell you, though, I took on Johnny G and another guy in a three-way Command & Conquer 3 game, and I won.
Yeah.
So like I said, I can rise to that. I won't claim to be the greatest competitor in the world.
You know, I think
I got lucky.
I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not very competitive is because I know that no matter how good I am, there's always somebody out there
who's better. Exactly.
So and really, what's the point? I'm there not to be the best I can be, not to push myself to new and exciting limits, but to just enjoy playing the game with my friends.
I agree. And that's part of what's turned me off to it as well. Is if you go like these online services and such, you just get some cocaine and Ritalin addled Twitch addict who, I mean, what can you do? I mean,
Well, I mean, for me, I have a completely different perspective in this because, like I've said many times, I did competitive first person shooting. I was part of a clan on, on one of those games, and it was a very competitive thing for us, but it's kind of a hybrid of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I was playing with my friends. We are all on vent. We're all speaking. We're all having a good time. We're all strategizing and being the best we can be as a combined unit. So it was cooperative play, but it was also against other people.
Well,
and we were very competitive, but we weren't competing with our friends. We were competing with people we didn't know.
Well, in the Command & Conquer 3 game, I don't think I won because I was the better player.
You went over and you punched a dude in the back of the head and knocked him out.
I took the 357 out and basically said, get the f*** away from your keyboard. I will kill you. I will kill you right now.
Are you approaching my AA? Click.
I honestly, what it was a little bit of diplomacy and triangulation. I knew they would not see me as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was I just stayed out of the conflict. They went after each other. I don't remember which one. One of them beat the other. But in the process of doing so, they had, of course, partially exhausted their economy. And on top of that, I had seen which units they were favoring. So all I did then was I sent one tiny raid in. They then sent their army against me, which I think was mostly air power. But by the time they showed up, because I had a stronger economy and seen what they were using, it was this wall of anti-aircraft missiles. And so I just obliterated their army. They had nothing left. And the ground forces I had, it was a bunch of what are called avatars, which are like these giant mech things that Nod uses, were just parked in the back of the base. And as soon as his Air Force was dead, out went the avatars, and he had no way of stopping me. But getting back to the game with Tex, it was funny because the game crashed before our really big war happened. So he and I said, you know what, we don't have time to do another one, so let's just, you show me yours, I'll show you mine. And what do we have out there? And it was funny because we had the war of the contingency plans. That, like, he had this hidden unit over here, but I had these stealth tanks over there, and he was going to do this, but I had an obelisk queued up that was ready to drop, but I hadn't yet placed, so I could put it wherever he brought in his forces. And he had, it was just, we both had plans A through F ready to go. I have no idea what would have happened if the first shots had actually flown.
I just still have more fun playing with people than against people. And
I enjoy doing both. If I can play with people against people,
yeah,
that's the ultimate for
me. That's all right.
Like I said, I was never that good of a shooter at first-person shooters.
You know, I like PvP and MMOs, too. I think competitive is a mindset. I mean, I enjoyed the PvP, and I wasn't fighting to lose, but I wasn't necessarily fighting to win, and I did enjoy winning. I mean, I don't know. I hate to sound like a hypocrite, but I don't consider myself a competitive person. But there are some competitive. There are some things where you have to be competitive to play.
Well,
get in the door, like War Machine. Even if you're playing with friends, if you're not at least trying to win in some way, it's not fun for them. It's not fun for you. So,
well, City of Villains though would be a great example of what Wayne and I were talking about a little bit earlier, and you were talking about as well, with no matter how good you are is always somebody better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When we went out in City of Illinstead, you and I tried to do a little PvP, and the two of us, we found one hero, and we could not even scratch the guy.
Yeah.
And the reason we couldn't is because we've been playing for a matter of months.
He's been playing for 5 years.
He's been playing for 5 years. He has this character completely min-maxed.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all these, what in most MMOs be the equivalent of gear. They're called
enhancements.
But he had all these super rare, super expensive enhancements that would take you and I 2 years of farming and probably $200 to a service in China to get that much influence to be able to purchase these things. And we couldn't even get past his regeneration rate. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, I do not have the time, energy, or interest in grinding up to that level.
Yeah.
I don't want to play on that level. You know, I would love to fight somebody who's equal to me just for fun, especially if I'm doing it with people I know. You and I go out and take on two other guys that we don't know.
I do have to admit that I was a dick in PvP this one time. I went into a PvP zone, and it was a lower level one. It's fair, though, because it lowers you to the level of the zone. And I ran into this guy, and he was a melee guy, and I was a ranged guy. But PvP and combat in City of Heroes is very, very fluid because the movement powers are so fast and they're so exaggerated. It's not just a little jump where you jump over a rock like in WoW or something. I mean, you are leaping over tall buildings. You are flying. You are teleporting through solid matter. You are going hundreds of miles an hour with super speed, whatever. And we both had super jump. We were both jump over tall buildings in a single bound type powers. But again, he was melee and very tough, very defensive. I was ranged and I could heal myself. So our opposites really matched each other well. And it was a totally even fight. I mean, it was like even Steven and we weren't hurting each other. I mean, we were doing stuff like baiting each other into NPCs that were friendly to me but enemies to him, and he would kind of fall for it and he'd have to fight him. I'd take advantage of it, and then he would pull out and then he would figure out. He did the same thing to me and I totally fell for it, and I had to, you know, pull out of that. And it was this real cool back and forth, but it kind of got to a point where I said to myself, it's like, okay, this has gone on for a really long time. It's time to end this somehow. Well, my character was a max level that had been lowered. And there's these things you can get, like badges and achievements. And some of the harder ones you can get, you can actually get extra powers out of. So I had been getting these really nice, these powers out of these badges. And I had been doing it for a couple of weeks before that. And I got ones that totally blew my defenses out of the water, totally blew my accuracy out of the water, totally blew my damage out of the water, only for 60 seconds. So I landed, stood still, blew all of these powers that this guy didn't have yet because he wasn't high enough level, and I turned myself into a god, a 60-second god, and then he lands in front of me, and I could just see him as he lands about 10 feet away from me and starts running right at me, and I'm standing there, and I could just picture this guy going, oh my god, I totally have this guy now, and he just starts slamming into me and just going crazy. He's like a Wolverine claw guy. He's just going crazy like a little berserk dude. Does no damage to me whatsoever. And then it's like, okay, alpha strike, alpha strike, alpha strike, alpha strike. And I just totally blew his face off his head.
So do you think that's the only time you did that in PvP? Because I want to remind you of an incident. Dan is on his melee character. I'm on my melee character. We are fighting it out, fighting it out, fighting it out. I managed to get the killing blow on Dan. He goes down. And I turn around, and there you are, blasting me in the face when I have one health point.
That was...
And Dan revives behind me.
I gotta say, Wayne, I'm proud of the fact that even though you did beat me, I made it that far. You had 10 levels on me. I mean, the fact that I took you that close to the brink.
That was just hilarious, though. I turn around, and there is Chad right there in the middle of the animation for his attack.
Yeah,
and
for the most powerful attack I can do. And it's just like, I was sitting literally in the rafters of this building in this PvP arena, and Dan and Wayne are going at it, and I'm watching it, and I'm not going to get involved. You know,
It's at least a 5-minute battle between us two. We're going all over
and
the place.
And there's other guys fighting in other parts of the thing, and I'm in the rafters, and I'm just watching this battle of the titans, and I'm like, I'm not going to get involved, not going to get involved, going to wait, not going to get involved. And then I saw that Dan was going down, and then the scales tipped, and then I'm like, okay. And I hit my sniper power, which takes several seconds to charge up. And it's just like, Dan's down. Wayne turns around. Blast! Just nails it.
So getting back to board
Dan
games.
And I, we team up even when we're not trying to team up.
So getting back to board games, what's your number one? If tomorrow I was going to wave a magic wand and make every board game in the world disappear but one, what's the one you would want spared?
Painful, because I'm a variety guy. I like variety. I understand the question, though. I would have to say my absolute favorite game that I get the most kick out of is Arkham Horror.
Ditto. Arkham Horror.
That's why I own every single expansion.
I don't know that I have one. I mean, like I said, this is like a whole new world of games open to me. It's not a board game, but to be honest, I'm going to have to go with Zombie Flux.
Zombie Flux is a lot of fun.
Cool game. Yeah.
I keep my copy of Zombie Flux with me at all times. It's usually out in my car.
If you've never played Flux,
don't. But the spin-off games.
Yeah, don't play main Flux, but Zombie Flux, Martian Flux, the spin-off games are great.
Monty Python Flux was pretty good, too. But Zombie's my favorite.
The gist of the game is that the game evolves as you play it. When it starts out, the only rules are if you have something like what's called a creeper, which is like a bad guy card, you have to immediately play it. And then each round, you have to draw one card and play one card.
Yeah, the initial first
rule. That's all the rules.
The first rule is draw one, play one. This is the game that as you start playing it, you could have the simplest rules of any game you've ever played, or one of the most complex, because you've got 20 rules out on
the
table.
You can start adding stuff like draw more cards, play more cards, trade hands with somebody. Here's the new objective of the game, because the game doesn't even start with an objective. So here's the objective of the game.
And you know the other cool thing about it is at any point, someone can come in and sit down. You deal them three cards and they're in the game.
Yeah, and we've done that. There was a game that you and a couple other guys were up there playing at Dave's place once, and I came in halfway through, you dealt me in, and I ended up winning the game a couple turns later.
And there is something about that game, I don't know what it is, but it's the fun nature of it, the cartoonish nature that we're playing, that we never get competitive about it, and half the time when someone wins, they're not even the one that played the card for them to win. We've gone through playing the same game back and forth for 10, 15 minutes.
Which someone's is funny, because like, most games...
Okay, Chad wins.
And it's not totally random. There is a modicum of tactics to it.
Yeah.
Pat? I think I'm going to have to agree with you guys with Arkham Horror just because of the
production quality.
It's good. And rules are good. With all the expansions. It is a good long game. Yeah. I mean, we can have a good long, like a 4-hour session.
Now, I have to say
session with it.
How you play it, to me, really enhances it. Because I've done it a couple of different ways. The best way is where you're playing and you're reading all the fluff text. You're really getting into the mood of it. Everybody's working together. We're all leaning into each other. We're all talking about the story within the story. We're filling in the blanks between the events and stuff with a little bit of RP. You know, we're not putting on our cake and fake fangs or anything like that. There's a little bit of an RP element to it. And that, to me, that's when it really gets good. That's when it really gets nice, fun, long game.
You want
to
know why isn't my number one on that list of the games you wouldn't want to go away is because I have a great time playing it with you guys. But to be honest, if I had the game, it's a lot harder to get someone who's not into those kind of games to play it. With all the rules, it's off-putting for a new person coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Something like, that's one of the reasons I go with Flux, is because I've set people down that would never imagine playing Arkham Horror.
Yeah.
Guys that don't consider themselves geeks at all, and I've been able to play the games with them.
Yeah. Now, I think the way not to go about playing Arkham Horror is when you turn it into something that's very mechanical. You know, you're not really reading the text on the cards. You're not doing the little bit of RP elements to it. The movement and the play of the game turns, it's like a clock. You're playing very efficiently. You're playing a very tight, tactical, and efficient game. And it's just, it kind of loses something. Arkham Horror is a game you should take your time with. It's a game you should enjoy playing. It's a game where you should make mistakes, and it's okay, and... You know, it doesn't have to be this tactically perfect game.
Yeah, a trend that I'm really enjoying, that I hope continues, as much as I rail against this in RPGs, I think is wonderful for board games, is the convergence of board gaming and video gaming.
Because
one of the things that I dislike about a lot of these board games is the amount of time, energy, and effort it takes to set them up, to put them away, to store and transport them. And I think it is great, like, for example, if you go on the Xbox Arcade, you can find games like Carcassonne that are available on there. There's one that Chad and I are playing right now, which has actually got its start as a video game and has since become a board game. But the video game was always designed to play like a board game. It's a game called Panzer General.
Yep, Panzer General Allied Assault. And if you're listening to this, try the demo. If you like the demo, look me up on Xbox Live. I am wanting to play this game with somebody, and Dan and I have not been able to hook up yet. No one else I know is playing it.
But I would love to see that happen with games like Descent.
God, I would love to set up a tournament
Arkham Horror
for Panzer General on our boards. That'd be awesome.
Well, we still want to do that Blood Bowl whenever that finally comes out.
Yeah, but it's going to drop with Duke Nukem. I know it.
Yeah. Duke Nukem and the final patch for Fallout 3. It's going
to.
All right. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up here. So thank you guys for tuning in to this little bonus episode, and we will catch you guys next time.
Board games, ending the. Sorry, no,
wrong show.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.